Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. Today is Sunday, March 6, 2016. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. My guest today is Janet Kahn. She's president of the Minnesota Chapter of Compassion and Choices, which is a national nonprofit organization working to improve end-of-life care and options. We're going to be talking about death and dying and end-of-life care from a humanist and atheist perspective today. And we're going to talk a little bit about the work that Compassion and Choices is doing nationally and here in Minnesota this year. Janet joins us in studio today. During this live show, we'd love you to call in with your thoughts and comments on the topic of the show. You can reach us at 952-946-6205, or you can email us at radio@mnatheist.org. Janet, thanks so much for joining me on Atheist Talk today.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about what we mean when we say death. Aid in death, death with dignity. There's a lot of terms that are going around about the topic of death with dignity. So let's start with that. What is death with dignity?
Well, death with dignity is the slogan or the label that came to be attached to the movement to provide options for the dying to control their own death to the extent possible. The idea was that because of the medical miracles today and what we can do, people are ending up spending the last weeks sometimes or days or weeks of their lives in the intensive care unit with tubes running in and out of their bodies and or else having emergency surgery that's not really going to affect the outcome of ultimate death. And the idea is that there must be more peaceful and humane ways for people to die. So part of that is what has been the development of advanced directives and people choosing a natural death and recognizing the right of people to refuse treatment. But also now the latest is actual aid in dying, which is one step further. And, in fact, we are now using that term in Compassionate Choices because we realize that aid in dying, having taken an active step to hasten your death through medication, is not the only way to have a dignified death. That many people have dignified deaths without any of, right to making their own choices. So we say aid in dying to specifically refer to having a physician prescribe medications that a person can take if and when their suffering becomes unbearable.
And where does Compassion and Choices come in? Tell us a little bit about that organization.
Well, we're the descendant of the original Hemlock Society that was founded by Derek Humphrey, which advocated the right of people to end their lives on their own terms. And through various mergers and so on, we're now known as Compassion and Choices, combining the two important parts, compassion, the not leaving people in suffering or letting people choose to end their own suffering because are very important. The second part is choices, and that is that it's the person's choice and it's not a choice that somebody is making for you.
So what kind of work does Compassion and Choices do? You're not going around and unplugging machines from the walls. So.
No, that is not our job, and we would never do that. And we don't advocate anybody else doing that either. No, we try to do education and outreach, things like being on radio shows, and we go around talking to groups about advanced care planning directives and aid in dying, the whole range of choices and options, and helping people know what their options are and what does it mean to say if you do or don't want such and such a procedure or how do I go about filling out an advanced directive. We are also involved in advocacy, both in legislatures and through the courts, a lot of litigation on people's patients' rights. And also there's individual consultation with patients and their families who are in end-of-life situations.
Is that speaking with lawyers, is that actual legal advice, or is it just higher-level, here's your rights?
Well, it's not – you mean the individual consultation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
– I guess I'm wondering if Compassion and Choices provides legal counsel for people.
No, I don't think it would be on a legal level. It's more on a medical level and things like how to navigate the medical system and knowing what your options are and advising people on the importance of talking with their families talking with their doctors.
Sure. And in Minnesota, the Minnesota chapter, do they do all the same kind of work that the national does, or is your focus a bit more honed?
No, well, we don't have any lawyers on staff. We're not doing litigation and so on. So it's more the education and the outreach. And we do a little bit of, you know, if somebody wanted to talk about it individually, we would do that. But we don't have the training. There's a specific group within the national organization that works on specific patients.
Sure. So this is an atheist radio show. So I want to talk for just a moment about why atheists and humanists care about this issue. Not all atheists and humanists do, but many do. And I want to talk about the reasons for why this is an important topic for this show today. So one of the things, obviously, church-state separation, a lot of our listeners feel quite strongly about the principle of church-state separation. And this is one of those issues that where many of the arguments against end of life or aid in dying are based in religious arguments. But also from a humanist perspective, I know that you've presented at the Humanists of Minnesota's Death and Dying series, which has been a 9-part series that's still ongoing. They've got their next meeting in April. What's going on from a humanist perspective? Why should humanists care about this issue?
Well, I think everybody should care about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody dies.
It affects us all.
It does definitely affect us all. So it's not specific to us. I think the difference about humanists, first of all, it carries forward the humanist value of respecting autonomy and human choice and human rights and human dignity. So that's the positive side. And the other is that, as you say, most of the opposition is religion-based. And atheists and humanists really don't have that problem.
Right.
So we don't have the idea that there's some supernatural deity that is going to determine how we die, if you think it's much more human matter.
Right. Yeah. My favorite go-to for topics like this is the Pew Research Center. You can often find a breakdown by religion.
Uh-huh.
And with very, very few exceptions, I think there were two on the entire list. Everyone talks about not being a human prerogative to end life, that's
right.
In God's purview. And yeah, you're right, exactly. The atheists and humanists were like, nope, not something that pertains to us as much.
Right. The Unitarians and the UCC, the United Church of Christ, which are the old Congregationalists, are the ones that are the exceptions to that. Well, I always say that if you really didn't think you should be interfering with God's plan, then you probably shouldn't be having blood transfusions and transplants and antibiotics.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope and not the one that the opponents
usually
like to talk about.
Right.
Minnesota Atheists, one of the things that I love about this group is their detailed public policy position. So I just want to read a little bit from the public policy position. It's found on the mnatheist.org website, and they have a specific section called End-of-Life Issues. This is from that section. Laws regulating end-of-life issues must be based on individual freedom and secular consequences. Religious ideas such as the belief that humans have souls or that a God's wishes must prevail cannot be considered when making secular law. Such religious ideas may legitimately influence personal decisions, but they can't be the basis for secular laws that must apply to everyone. Minnesota Atheist supports the right of mentally competent, terminally ill people who are unable to find relief from their illness to have voluntary options of self-termination, doctor-assisted suicide, or euthanasia. Consent of the patient in these end-of-life decisions shall be sufficient to shield doctors and others from legal prosecution in their efforts to fulfill the wishes of terminally ill patients. And there's a bit more after that if you're interested in reading about that. Again, that's on the mnatheist.org website, but very succinct. I think it describes my personal views very
Sounds
well.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I like it. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the arguments against aid in dying a little bit later in the show. But this one's interesting because I see a lot of times I do work for a abortion clinic, and I see a lot of the same groups that are opposed to abortion also opposed to end of life care, or not end of life care, but aid in dying legislation. And this topic's interesting because it's got a lot of it's not just the religious arguments that are being made against aid in dying. We've got moral, ethical, legal issues, all of which are very worthy of discussion, I think. So we'll talk a little bit about that later.
Well, the interesting comparison with the abortion issue is that at least I don't agree with it, but what the Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, which is a big opponent, will say is that, you know, you're taking an innocent life, and so it's affecting not just you, but some other being. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't even argue that when you're talking about aid in dying, as long as you're, as long as it's the person's choice. It's not anybody else. It's just me, and who better than myself to make that choice for myself.
Well said, yeah. You presented at the Humanists of Minnesota's Death and Dying series, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. How was that?
It was good. It was a small group discussion in the library in St. Paul, and we talked about advanced care planning and what that was all about, and then we talked about the specifics of healthcare directives is what we talked about. But it's been a wide-ranging series that gets at people's attitudes and experiences and how to handle situations.
Okay, well, with that, let's go to break. We have to go to break for just a few minutes. Please stay with us, and we'll return to Atheist Talk with our guest, Janet Kahn. I'm Brianne Billion. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950, KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned in to Atheist Talk. I'm your host, Brianne Billieu, and my guest today is Janet Kahn. If you'd like to speak with us, you can call us at 952-946-6205 or shoot us an email at radio@mnatheist.org. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about a term that I used interchangeably that there's a movement to not use them so interchangeably anymore. The term assisted suicide versus aid in dying. So assisted suicide is a term that we're trying to not use as much anymore, correct?
Right. And that's because we're saying what we're talking about, we do not consider to be suicide. Now, if you get real technical about dictionary definitions, okay. But we're talking about usage and how and, you know, how public speech. Suicide is, I define it as being a death that you bring about for yourself in a case where you would not otherwise be dead. So it's choosing to die, and it's often associated with either some sort of emotional crisis or a mental illness or some kind of desperation, or as they always say, the long-term solution to a short-term problem. And what we're talking about for aid in dying is terminally ill people who are dying. It's not that they want to die or they want to end their life. They are dying of some disease or condition, and what they're choosing is to end their suffering.
And that we're going to talk a little bit more about some legislation that's currently in Minnesota, and one of those. One of the planks in that legislation is that we would define terminating one's life under the law as not suicide, correct?
Correct.
Okay, cool. All right, so now that we know our terms here, I'm going to try not to say assisted suicide with aid in dying for the rest of the interview. Let's talk about the difference between aid in dying, which is illegal in most geographies, and choosing death, which is legal in some places.
Right. Now, suicide itself is now legal. There was a time when it wasn't, but it is. But assisting a suicide is not legal. And as you say, we want to have this situation where a doctor could provide a prescription and in a legal manner.
But right now, you can choose death anywhere in the country.
Right. And
with a physician's knowledge, with other people's knowledge, you can choose death.
Right. And we would call that allow natural death. And there are things that you can do that are legal, even if doctor-assisted dying is not legal. But you can, First of all, you can refuse any medical treatment. And also, if you have an advance directive, your agent can refuse medical treatment on your behalf if you can't make a decision, if you're past decision-making capacity. And all of the things that are legal are things that could be chosen on your behalf by a directive designated agent. But that includes refusing any treatment or discontinuing a treatment that's already begun. So, for instance, if you're on a ventilator, you could come off of it. It used to be that people thought that you couldn't do that, but you can. You can refuse anything that's recognized right. You can also stop any kinds of medications you have. So if you're on something that's keeping your heart going, you could choose to go off of that medication and allow your heart to stop if that's what was going to happen. You can increase your pain medication. Another recognized right is your right to have adequate pain management. And that even if the most commonly used is morphine, and that does tend to depress your respiration, and that's why it could have the effect of hastening your death, but that that is legal and proper medical care.
What's the difference between increasing your morphine to a point where you are going to hasten your death and having a drug prescribed to you by a doctor that is clearly intended to? I mean, is that the difference? One is intended to end your life and one just...
Well, the pain medication and also palliative, it's called, sometimes called palliative sedation, the purpose of that is to relieve the suffering. And if it can relieve the suffering and you can continue to live in some manner that is acceptable to you, then that's fine. And it would also, it could be used in situations, you know, as I say, in non-terminal situations. Whereas the aid in dying is specifically saying, I'm ready to go now, basically. Okay. I don't want to suffer anymore.
Sure.
And also, you can withdraw life support systems, and there's also voluntary death by stopping eating and drinking, which would cause death in 7 to 10 days, probably.
Let's talk a little bit. We've got about 2.5 minutes before the break, so I could spend more time talking about that past section, but I want to talk a little bit about personal stories, people who have been affected by either having the right to aid in dying or who have not had that aid and have suffered as a result of that. Can you give us a few stories?
Well, so many people that come to Compassionate Choices usually have a story. I mean, that's why they're there, and more often than not, they've witnessed a really bad death, a horrible death, and a lot of suffering. And they say, this can't be right. I don't want to see this anymore for myself or any of my loved ones. And so you get the stories of one of the people that came to us is named Dave, and his father was 95 years old and begging him to say, take me to Oregon, because he knew that he could get legal relief there, but he couldn't get it here. And so he died slowly, painfully, and he was totally mentally aware. So he had the mental competence to, had he been in Oregon, he could have requested aid in dying, but it was not available here. So he had to sort of watch himself as all his systems failed, and he was in not necessarily painful suffering, but just the suffering of losing control and losing autonomy and watching this happen. And finally he died after a day of feeling his lungs being filled with fluid and trying to struggle to breathe at that. And that all could have been avoided, and he didn't, that isn't the way he wanted to die, but he wasn't given the choice here.
One thing you mentioned really quick I want to clear up, you can't just cross the border into Oregon and go into a hospital and ask for aid in dying.
You have to be a resident, and that's what the famous case of Brittany Menard did. She was a 29-year-old in California who had a fatal brain tumor, and after attempting treatments, they found that it was not going to work. She was dying. And so she specifically moved to Oregon and did establish a residence there ahead of time so that she could take advantage of that. the beautiful thing is that in the meantime, she became an advocate for Aid and Dine and did a lot of speaking and helped the end result that in California, a year later, they did legalize Aid and Dine.
I want to talk a little bit about the importance of living wills after the break here.
Okay.
And how those can help people with their end of life choices.
Uh-huh.
We do have to go to break, though, listeners. Please stay with us through the break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Brianne Bilyeu here with Janet Kahn from Compassion and Choices, and you're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu, and I'm speaking with Janet Kahn, president of the Minnesota Chapter of Compassion and Choices, the nation's largest end-of-life advocacy organization. If you have a question or comment for Janet on the topic of today's show, please give us a call. We're at 952-946-6205. I'm also watching the email, so if you have a question you want to type in, we're at radio@mnatheist.org. Before the break, we were going to talk about end-of-life planning. Advanced planning. I want to talk just a little bit about that because it's really so important to making sure that that the end of our life looks and is the way that we want it to be when we can make those decisions when we're of sound mind and body.
Absolutely. I'm glad to take a moment to make the case for advanced care planning and advanced care directives. If you want to have any control over what happens to you at the end, now is the time to start thinking about it. Think about what makes your life worth living, in what conditions you would, what kinds of life support or life sustaining or life prolonging treatment you would or would not want, and have conversations with your family and anybody who might be involved in your care so they know what you want. And then document that with a healthcare directive. And the first part of that is to name a healthcare agent who is the person that, if you cannot make choices for yourself or communicate, that person is empowered to make those choices and make the calls for you with your doctors and your medical team. So it has to be somebody who you have had those conversations with, who really understands you and is willing to take on the task of speaking for you. It has to be somebody who's assertive, somebody who can make decisions and sometimes in crisis situations, and will honor your choices even if they don't like them, you know, even if it's against their will. So sometimes it's not the person who's closest to you because it may be too hard for that person
sure.
to make that call. But and you can specify when you would want to keep going and when you wouldn't.
Where do people generally go to write up these end-of-life directives?
You can get a directive from us, from Compassion and Choices. And, in fact, if you emailed compchoicemn@comcast.net, I will send you one with a little packet that's the form and some additional supplemental materials to help you work it out. There's also honoringchoices.org. Honoring Choices is an initiative that the Medical Society and the hospitals are making together in the Twin Cities to bring the advanced care planning program to everybody. And they have developed the form, and that's the form, in fact, that we distribute to.
And I know that any lawyer can help you do this also if you've got lawyer services, right?
We don't really recommend using
lawyer. Okay.
Because they sort of – the lawyers see things through a different lens.
Okay.
And it isn't this – I would recommend using the Honoring Choices form, which is more based on your choices, your quality of your life, your wishes – and your medical options.
Cool. And I was recently in my health clinic, and I saw that they had packets that you could just take with you. Are those the same ones that organization is working with? Probably.
Probably.
Okay.
Right.
Cool. So because you are working with the hospitals to do that.
And if you're Nice. Working with a clinic or a hospital and you want to talk about it, you can say you want to talk with their whoever it is that's trained on their staff to do the advanced care planning. That's the buzzword, advanced care planning.
Advanced care planning. Very good. Okay. One of the reasons why this interview is so timely is because we've actually got some current actions here in Minnesota, don't we, in the legislative session for 2015-16. This is a bill called the Minnesota Compassionate Care Act. It's in the Senate and the House, and there's a Senate hearing coming up this month in the Health and Human Services and Housing Committee, correct?
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's modeled on the Oregon legislation or process for aid and dying. So I'll tell you what it involves. It's for terminally ill, mentally competent adults who are residents of the state, who are making a voluntary choice, free of coercion, to obtain a prescription for medication from their doctor that they would then take at home or wherever they were. But only if and when they felt it was time. So it's not that you would go into the doctor and, you know, come out with something and be dead in 24 hours. It's something that gives you a choice and an option. There are a lot of safeguards so that, you have to make a written request to your doctor. In fact, two written requests separated by at least 15 days.
Yeah.
And your primary physician has to refer you to a second physician who has to also agree that you have met all the criteria to qualify.
So two requests, two different doctors, 15 days apart, and you also need witnesses, right?
Yes, the requests are have to have two witnesses.
The 222 law.
Right.
Okay.
And a person has to be able to take the medicine themselves to ingest it. Now, normally that would be orally and swallowing, but some people have feeding tubes, and if you can pour it into your own feeding tube, that would probably qualify. That's okay, too. But it's not an injection, and it's not somebody forcing something into you.
So one of the things, and I know this is a really hard issue, this is really an emotional issue, but this law would only apply to Minnesota residents who are at least 18 years old.
Yes.
So are there any protections or any moves to establish protocols for aid in dying for children under, you know, people under the age of 18?
That has not been part of any of the legislation in this country so far.
Sure.
No.
Has it been discussed? Have there been arguments for? Because there are certainly children who do suffer these sort of unfortunate circumstances where death will become inevitable.
I mean, that would be the only thing that would be available for them is for their guardians to decline treatment.
Okay. So the choosing death rather than aid in dying.
Right. And it also doesn't cover people who have Alzheimer's. And, you know, that is a gap, but it's something that just can't at this time be included because we insist on it being voluntary and that you have to be mentally competent at the time you make the request.
Understood.
So you can't say that, in the future, when I am terminally ill, you have to be terminally ill and you have to be mentally competent. And with Alzheimer's, you're not both of those things at the same time. And so you can't say, well, when I get to the point of being terminally ill or when I get to the point of being mentally incompetent, then do something. You can't do that.
Sure. Yeah. You can certainly see the conflict there.
Right. And throughout your physician that you're working with would be reminding you that you can change your mind at any time. And the interesting thing, now they've been doing this for like 17 years in Oregon. And in that time, first of all, not very many people choose it. So we think this would be a great boon for everybody to have the peace of mind knowing that this option was available. But only a fraction, in fact, less than a third of 1% of all the deaths in Oregon have been through this legislation in these 17 years. So that means like a little over 1,300 people, prescriptions. And of those 1,300 prescriptions in 17 years, a third of them didn't even use it. So they just let the disease take its course, which illustrates that if you got the medication or just the prescription, but you felt fine for the next year, that's not a problem. Nobody mm-hmm. says, well, you have to take it.
Right, yeah. So some other interesting things that are in the Minnesota Compassionate Care Act. The prescribing doctor confirms that the patient's not being coerced, so that's
yes.
another safeguard, or unduly influenced, which is trickier,
yeah.
It's very clearly defined here that has to be done. The prescribing doctor will talk to the patient about feasible alternatives.
It's yes.
Are you
yes.
really, really sure? Did you know about this? Did you know about this? So right. there's another one. And the doctor has to offer the patient two opportunities to withdraw the request.
Right.
So not just you put it in and then it's in. It's the are you really, really, really
right.
sure?
Right.
And so there's lots of those steps in this act.
And the reminder that you don't have to take it and you can change your mind at any time.
Right. Another thing, we were talking about advanced care directives also. This there's another provision in here that your attorney, in fact, or your conservators can't do this for you.
Right.
So even if you've given power of attorney or signed someone,
the agent.
Yeah, the healthcare agent, then they cannot make this request for aid in dying medication
Correct.
On your behalf.
Correct.
It just has to come from you. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the arguments against death with dignity. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time on this because these are fairly easy to find online if you want to uh-huh. find out. And I think most of these arguments are either not applicable to me as a non-believer. Again, we were talking about the religious arguments, MCCL's arguments against end of life, aid in dying. But one of the ones that we haven't talked about yet is the non-religious argument, that the slippery slope argument, that this is just eugenics by another name, that this will this start with people who are of sane mind and body, or a sane mind and a sound body, but it will eventually lead to us going into people's homes and killing them because we think that they don't deserve to live anymore. So talk a little bit about that and what the response to that is, aside from that's ridiculous.
Right. Well, first, some people will say, well, look what's happened in Europe and now they have euthanasia. But what happened in Europe is totally different from our legislation because they never made a distinction between aid in dying and euthanasia. So that's always been available to them. So that's not they have not gone on any slippery slopes. And what's happened in the United States is determined by what people are willing to allow to happen. I like to say that all of progress, you could call, is the civil rights movement a slippery slope? I mean, first you recognize people as citizens, and the next thing you know, they've got the right to vote, you know? There are slopes that go up and slopes that go down, and I think it's up to us as responsible citizens to make sure that we're going in the right direction. And if things need improving, and then we can make those improvements, but that doesn't mean that we're going downhill because we make changes.
Sure. I did want to note here that currently the Minnesota Medical Association currently opposes assisted suicide.
Right.
Have you been working with them to, what steps have you taken to work with them to either get them to adjust their stance or, and unfortunately I hear the outro music, so let's come back to this in the last segment, okay?
Okay.
All right, so listeners, please stay with us through the break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Janet Kahn. And I am Brianne Bilyeu, and this is AM 950 KTNF. Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. Before we return to our guest, Janet Kahn, we have just a few announcements. First, thank you to member Brent Michael Davids for composing the music that you're listening to right now. He wrote that for Atheist Talk, and we're grateful for it. Thank you, Brent. Our radio program, I want to let you know, our radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of our listeners. Any donation, great or small, helps keep us on the air and in podcast. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. If you're able to help out with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. We can't do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina, Minnesota. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you have a business or a project that you'd like to advertise on the program, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org, and we'll talk to you about how to set something like that up. So for upcoming events, we've got, today is our monthly post-show brunch at Cucumbers Restaurant. Janet, my gracious guest, will be joining us at today's brunch. So if you'd like to continue the conversation that we're having today, come on down to Cucumbers in Edina. Brunch begins at 10:30 a.m., and I hope to see you there. Our brunch and other activities are listed on our Minnesota Atheist Meetup group, which is a great place to find all of the atheist and free thought events going on across the Twin Cities and wider Minnesota. Just in the next week, we've got Toastmasters in St. Paul. We've got a free-thinking females group in Maple Grove, a volunteer food packing opportunities going on in New Hope. We've got some godless gamers playing board games in Roseville at Fantasy Flight Game Center, and Blasphemers Lunch in Richfield. So all over the place. Check out our Minnesota Atheist group on Meetup for more information. And keep the Minnesota Atheist website in mind. That's where you can listen to all of our previous podcasts. We've got a cable TV show. You can find the links to watch those episodes there. You can browse our articles and our book reviews and important information about who we are and the history of Minnesota Atheists. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to Janet Kahn and Compassion and Choices. So, Janet, right before we left, we were talking about the Minnesota Medical Association. And they currently have a policy in place that opposes, they call it assisted suicide. They refer to it as assisted suicide on the website. They say physicians must not perform euthanasia or participate in assisted suicide. They say the societal risks of involving physicians in medical interventions to cause patients' deaths is too great to condone euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide. So is your group working with them? Because that's a rather strong position. It seems like you're going to need some allies on the medical association.
I agree. We do have members who are doctors who are reaching out to the MMA. They have a ethics committee or an end-of-life committee, I'm not sure which is called, that we have our representatives have met with. And what we're hoping is that they would do what the California Medical Association did, which is to take a neutral position and just say we're not for it or against it. And that really helped in California, and we would hope that the Minnesota Association would make the same decision.
Okay, great. And speaking of working with outside groups, who are your allies in this push?
Well,
what other groups are you working with?
We have been reaching out to various Unitarian Universalist congregations, various church groups that are, you know, the more progressive or open to that sort of thing. We don't have any specific grouping yet, but we're reaching out. As I say, there is to doctors. There is a group called Doctors for Dignity that we're organizing. And, yeah, we would like to have a coalition, as I say, but I don't think we have a specific lineup at this time.
How about, what's the temperature of the legislature here in Minnesota? How is it looking in the House and the Senate?
Well, the Senate is more positive than the House just because of who controls it. Republicans control the House, and the Democrats control the Senate, which shouldn't make a difference. It shouldn't be a partisan
right.
issue because,
yeah.
as I said before, everybody dies. It appears that it sometimes the votes and the decisions come down on a partisan basis, which is unfortunate. But what we are hoping to do is have the hearing this session, but we know it's not going to. We're not going to try to advance the legislation beyond that, probably. But we are looking. It'll be brought up again in the next session in 2017 and 2018, And we're hoping to bring it forward then. We're hoping there's so much more public awareness and public discussion and public openness to this idea. There's always been a majority of people that are in favor of aid in dying when there's been polls on a national level. But the politicians always have a hard time dealing with it because the opponents, even though they're in the minority, are so vocal and do have a big influence on what happens. So it's, you know, it's dealing with the legislature, not with the public. But hopefully the public support will carry over into the political support.
This is the first time that an aid in dying legislation has been brought up in the state, right? Proposed in the state or
as
no?
As far as I know, okay. I'm not sure. Sure. I don't think it's been before.
How long, do you have any idea how long it took Oregon? What was their process like? Was it years? Was
It was brewing for a long time, and then they finally got it. It passed there, not through the legislature, but through a public referendum. And it first passed in, I think it was 94, and then there was so much opposition and there were court cases and they actually had to bring it up again in a second referendum, which again was passed overwhelmingly by the public. There were still some court fights, but it finally was implemented in 98.
And aid in dying is now allowed in 5 states, correct?
5 states.
So we've got Oregon,
Washington, Montana, Vermont, and most recently California.
And I'm guessing that with every successive state, with the precedents being set, that time to enactment and implementation is getting shorter and shorter. So Minnesota is hopefully not going to take as long a road as some of the other states have taken.
Yeah, we hope to get a lot of momentum from California.
Let's talk a little bit about how people can help. So if people are listening to the show and they're like, this is a topic that I have interest in and I want to help out with the legislation or I want to help out, I want to support Minnesota Compassion and Choices, where do they go? What do they do?
Well, the national website, which lets you sign up for alerts and also I think there's a petition online, is compassionandchoices.org. You have to spell out "and" because it's the internet. And then we have the Minnesota chapter has our own. They have national has a website, Facebook page, and then we have our own Compassion and Choices Minnesota, and that would keep you up to date on things that we were doing here, events and upcoming updates and so on. And also, you can certainly send a letter to your state senator. If you go to www.leg.mn,
that'll get there, huh?
No, there's something missing in there. I just Google Minnesota legislature and it'll get you there.
Excellent.
And then you can find out who your legislator is, and they usually have little contact things, so you can send in an email right from that webpage.
Wonderful. Janet, thank you so much for being with us. We are out of time, so we've got to get going here. Thank you, and we'll see you at brunch. Everyone else, come on out and join us.